You are listening to www.interlinking.org.
Darren?
Yeah.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very good.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
No problem. Got like 10 minutes or something, so we should jump in.
Oh, let's rock as quick as we can.
Yeah,
so here's what inspired me to get in touch with you. I got kind of frustrated seeing some of the reviews of The Fountain. And Basically, at the core of it for me, it strikes on a pet peeve that's gone on in my life on many occasions with films that I feel have these transrational dimensions which challenge the viewer to a place where the intellect is not sufficient anymore in order to fully apprehend what's going on with the film. Examples could be Mulholland Drive, Thin Red Line, Dancer in the Dark, maybe The Matrix. And that's kind of what I have felt is going on in some of the reviews with The Fountain. Mm. And I wanted to explore that with you.
Okay.
Any comments off the top
of
your head?
I think, for me, The Fountain's always been more of a conversation than it is a movie. I want people to experience it, and I think to do that, you have to interact with it. It's very much, more of a literary event than it is just a typical heroic structure. Even though there is this, mythological heroic structure throughout the film, I think it's also a puzzle, and it's using different parts of your minds because I think emotionally at the core is something that's really deep for a lot of people and hard to, think about. And so while that's all going on, I wanted people to be occupied with other things as well.
I guess I wonder if you feel like it's even possible to, strictly speaking, think about some of the dimensions of this film. I mean, that's the question for me. Is that riddle, in part, what you're inviting people to is this deeper dimension within themselves in which the intellect is not going to be adequate anymore?
I think, there are no answers to any of these big questions. They're the same questions people have been asking since, literally the beginning of time. We've always been asking this question of what is life, what is death? And, there are no answers. There's just meditation of the questions.
The direct experience of what is conveyed, particularly, in the conclusion of The Fountain, when there's this quite ecstatic supernova of unbounded experience. It's not an answer to that riddle. Nonetheless, I think that you've put the viewer, if ready and able, into contact with something that's beyond the merely personal or merely intellectual dimensions of themselves. Have you been frustrated at all with how that gets missed sometimes in the way the film is received?
No, I mean, I think, I don't think the film was made for critics, and I think a lot of people, they watch the movie. That night they have to file a report. And, The Fountain to me is a type of movie that sits with people for many days. And that's the type of response we've been getting is people, 3-4 days saying, oh, and things clicking for them. And people wanting to see it a second and third time. And it is a richer experience when you see it more and more because there's a lot of layers and a lot of work went into making the film a very dense experience.
That's exactly the kind of experience that I had with it. It's not something that you walk out of the theater which is all tied up nicely with a bow on top.
Exactly.
It submits itself to multiple viewings, and there is an ongoing relationship with the film. I think it feels like a very natural and exponentially expanded with what's going on with your film's Pie, Requiem for a Dream. There's always been a very fearless, brave engagement with these fundamental, messy, and painful questions of the human experience.
Yeah.
I was curious and gratified to see how, for instance, with a film like Pi, where there was this realization or recognition, some illumination of sorts through the subject encountering the great design. It's almost like an enlightenment experience through the mathematical or the equation or the reality behind the appearances. And it seems as though that has deepened through the succession, culminated with The Fountain in this experience of the divine through relationship, love, the intersubjective. And it almost just feels as though you have gone from one kind of mysticism with Pi. Requiem for a Dream could almost be considered, as a Buddhist practitioner myself, I think of it as the ultimate in Buddhist exploration of samsara. Mm-hmm. And this mystical theme seems to have continued with The Fountain in an even deeper, more expansive way, with this relational, intersubjective supernova between the masculine and feminine roles in this film. Do you think that's a fair description of that succession?
I think it's very interesting. I don't know how much of that stuff is conscious when you're doing it. It just sort of happens. You just sort of write, and I think you channel things, and the result is what people end up seeing in the theater. And it's interesting when people point out those types of connections to me, because I'm not fully always conscious of them. I'm just trying to channel what means something to me at the moment.
What is your personal inspiration or background in terms of a spiritual lineage or practice or history? Because there seems to be a lot of winking going on in these films in ways that I think people...
What do you mean,
from
winking?
I mean the mystery informing the content and orchestration of these films in a way that would indicate an intimacy with esoteric traditions or mysticism or perennial philosophy.
And not so esoteric to me. I think they're pretty mainstream. I think people are, you know, since I was a kid, I've been asking the big questions. And I think I've always enjoyed, you know, thinking about consciousness and reality and exploring what it means to be here. I think that's why we're here, is to ask these questions. And
I do totally agree. I mean, I guess that part is the perennial philosophy, the same enduring questions which are asked in all of these traditions. It's central to the human condition. But for instance, in the premise of death is the road to awe, I think that there is an invitation there. And the reason I bring in a word like mysticism is the direct experience is the invitation. The death is the road to awe is inviting the viewer into this relationship that you're describing with the fountain. And in doing so, that is what distinguishes, for instance, mysticism from a mere dogmatic or doctrine-based belief. So I guess I see the difference between belief-based religion or spirituality and what goes on, for instance, in the fountain, which is this immersion into that mystery. That's why I wonder what you're bringing to it in terms of your own experiences or history.
You know, it's a mishmash, because I think I've read so many different things from so many different places. And I sort of have always been, you know, very much a tapestry maker in weaving my own reality and things that work for me and things that make sense to me. But I think I approach everything as a scientist, very much from the world of reason, and through reason trying to grasp at some type of spiritual human truth.
That's what's interesting, the congruence between mysticism and empiricism in that sense, because mysticism in that perennial way in all of these traditions is based upon the direct experience, gathering that data through the experiment of the human being and awareness and the direct apprehension. And I definitely see that what's going on in The Fountain and these other films. I wonder as well about your own encounters with that. And if I might ask you about your parents, what was going on in your personal life that helped inspire or form the architecture of this piece, the direct experiences there, because clearly death is the road to awe. I know that you were struck with some tough news about both your parents when this was coming into formation.
You know, that was a place to emotionally grab onto. And, you know, I think, look, you know, mortality is something that has perplexed humanity always, and searching for a fountain of youth is, you know, one of our oldest myths and oldest stories. So I think just tied on to, you know, this ancient story, which hadn't really been told through the film lens. And, you know, they're big themes and big ideas, and they just hit somewhere, you know, inside that you can't really talk about where it's from. It just is. And that's what kind of drove me to keep working on the film.
Can I ask you about the climate, the atmosphere that exists in bringing to the world a film with this kind of sincerity and vulnerability? You know, there's a little bit of a syndrome sometimes in the culture of cool or in Hollywood or maybe perhaps in the West in general or around the world, where there's a jadedness or, you know, there's a certain threshold to cross over to get people to that place of exposure and vulnerability.
I was surprised with how much cynicism we've run into, because to me cynicism is kind of, was cool in the 90s, you know, in the David Letterman era. And it feels in a post-9/11 world that, you know, this world needs help and needs earnestness and needs some healing. And, you know, the world's in dire straits right now. And so I was surprised with how many cynics are still out there thriving and thinking they're still cool.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to change, because I think it really can't maintain itself in this, you know, environment where our environment is, you know, being burnt down and destroyed. And I think it will change as people realize that, you know, it's no longer the Monica Lewinsky hunky-dory era.
Well, I agree, and I wonder, I think that's inevitable, that either we're able to move forth into that part of our humanity or it's going to render us undone.
Yeah.
I also wonder if you feel there's a kind of 1-2 punch, because these deeper dimensions of the transrational, spiritual, the mystical, the kind of mystical empiricism that we talked about a minute ago, when people encounter this film and are perplexed by it in the best sense, that they are encountering that sense of awe or wonder in which the intellect is no longer adequate, then it triggers, personally I feel in reviewers oftentimes with critics, it triggers that impulse to go to the cool, to go to the cynicism, to go to the rolling of the eyes,
yeah,
and dismiss something that otherwise would require us to die into it and
yeah,
join into that experience.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right on to it. And I can't really add anything better to that.
Yeah.
But I
well,
agree
let's
with
stop
you
them from doing that, man. Let's crack open the heart of love. I mean, I got to tell you.
I think it's going to change. I think as, you know, we continue to choke ourselves, which we are, we're going to see more and more sincere statements. And I think I was reading Variety yesterday that they just let all these films into Sundance. And one of the programmers there was talking about how all these films are taking a much more solemn tone and taking responsibility for, you know, what's happening in the world, which I think is a very interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the postmodern noose, isn't it? I mean, either
yeah,
we find a way to move into that part of our humanity, or we're really going to be fucked in a colossal way.
We already are fucked in a colossal way now. So
yes, and, you know, the difference, for instance, between your access and facility with this sense of humor or freshness that does exist in a film like Pi or Requiem for a Dream, even if it has that dark undertone to it, is that moving into with The Fountain, you have an option or an access to both of those things. And I think the paralysis occurs when there's only the reflex toward irony. There's only the reflex towards the deconstruction.
Yeah, I agree.
And
the Pulp Fiction era is over.
Well, I just want to give you props for going into that place of vulnerability and sincerity, because we
spread
need
the
that
word, my friend.
I am totally spreading the word.
Right.
So there is an enormous population and contingency that wants to see this flowering in the human condition. And I, without exaggeration, feel that you're really facilitating that. And that is one of the great assets of The Fountain. Last thing I want to ask you before we let you out of here is a technical question about CGI, which I don't even know what it is. But I do know that the space cinematography, some of the visuals and imagery, the lush imagery in this film is really just about the best I've ever seen, and
well,
the most emotionally impacting.
Yeah.
How did you do it? What is it?
Most people would have shot things, you know, not at all with photography, but would have created things on computers. That's how it's been done for the last 10, 20 years, is computer models. And very early on, I want to try and reinvent, you know, the sense of space. And so I found someone who photographs chemical reactions and biological life forms through microscopes. So everything you saw was actually photographed through a microscope. And then the whole idea was like a fractal relationship between small and large. If you photograph something small, if it's real physics, it actually might represent something large. And that's how we did it.
So you literally were filming microscopic forms of actual organic biotic material.
A lot of what you're watching was time lapse of yeast growing.
Wow.
Stick that in your pipe and smoke it.
It's insane. It gets back to these orders of intimacy, you know, between what's going on the microcosmic level and the macrocosmic level. And I think that explains for me at least part of why looking at this film is emotionally different on some level than so many of the other stale.
Well, thank you so much for the time. I got to run.
I really appreciate it, Darren. We're going to get the word out.
Okay, thanks, bro. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The cure for altitude sickness. Let's begin with an analogy. Let's imagine giving a drug, an entheogenic, to three different people. Same drug, same dose, same exact conditions. The first person, a fundamentalist Christian, reports seeing Jesus Christ. Jesus speaks to them and confirms the ultimate and literal truth of the Bible. The second person, a neurosurgeon, takes the drug and spontaneously acquires the capacity to see the systems of the body in vivid detail. The secrets of biology are revealed to her and illuminated. But the third person takes the drug and reports the strangest experience of all, a cosmic paradox. They encounter a self with no opposite, a reality behind the appearances. In short, they glimpse enlightenment. Same drug, same setting, same circumstances, three different altitudes of awareness. Each interpretation of the drug-induced vision is right for that particular altitude, but they are not equal. Some interpretations are deeper than others, and this is why The Fountain is not getting a fair shake in the media. It's being reviewed by critics who are out of their altitude in judging it. Like many great films with deeper enigmatic dimensions, Mulholland Drive, Thin Red Line, Dancer in the Dark, I, Heart Huckabees, The Matrix, The Fountain's transrational features have been mistaken by some as merely irrational fodder. This phenomenon in which symbols from higher altitudes of awareness are filtered through lower, more limited perspectives induces what I will call altitude sickness. In such instances, a viewer anchored in the rational center of gravity gets interpretive vertigo when they encounter something from beyond or above their register. The subject often dismisses the UFO or unidentifiable freaky ontology as extraneous nonsense. But we know better. Each altitude has its own epistemologies or ways of knowing. A movie like The Fountain is not just a flat monochromatic it with a right or a wrong interpretation to be had. It depends upon the altitude of the subject interpreting it. A brief survey of reviews of The Fountain from major papers illustrates this point. Take, for example, this jaded bit of bile from Ray Bennett of The Hollywood Reporter, and I quote, "Early in The Fountain, writer-director Darren Aronofsky's flatulent dissertation on the benefits of dying, someone says, 'Death is the path to awe.' Aw, shucks, isn't that what suicide bombers are led to believe? Aronofsky wants us to believe in a story about seeking the fountain of youth that covers three incarnations." End quote. No perspective is wrong, just partial. But Ray Bennett comes as close to getting it wrong as you can. Aronofsky doesn't want us to believe anything. The fountain is not a dogma. It's a painting, a poem, a prismatic reflection of mystery, and our role is to engage it, dialogue with it. Here's some thoughts from another critic, Karina Chicano of the Los Angeles Times. Quote, "As pretentious as it is silly, The Fountain is just the type of impenetrable indulgence that gives the concept of personal artistic visions a bad name." End quote. How about this review from Meredith Brody of the Chicago Reader, who calls The Fountain, quote, "a pretentious, unfocused, and fussy mess in which director Darren Aronofsky manages to make Hugh Jackman unattractive and unsympathetic. Even fans of Aronofsky's incoherent, flashy Pie and somewhat more coherent, flashy Requiem for a Dream will be scratching their heads." Really, Meredith? Are you sure? Because I am that fan you speak of. I loved Pie and Requiem for a Dream, and I was not scratching my head while I watched The Fountain. I was drying my eyes. I have found all three of Aronofsky's films moving and enigmatic in the best sense. It's crude and lazy readings like yours, Meredith, that have me scratching my head. In the toxic climate of these reviewers' cynicism, even the critics who love the film have to apologize for it, as is the case with Richard Corliss of Time magazine, whose headline reads, "I admit it, I liked The Fountain." A few critics demonstrate some insight and openness, though, as with William Arnold of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, who writes, quote, "In an era when even the so-called independent cinema chases formulas and is ruled by cowardly herd instinct, you really have to admire Aronofsky's guts for making such a risky, uncompromising, spiritual-minded film." End quote. Too few and far between are the reviewers like Amy Biancoli of the Houston Chronicle, whose review deserves to be cited at length. Quote, Before contemplating the sublime metaphysical head trip called the fountain, it's best to remove your shoes and socks, shave your head, assume the lotus position, exhale slowly. The Fountain is a film that defies description, summation, expectation, or any other shun. Exquisitely beautiful and almost unbearably sad, it is also, no way around this, truly strange. The Fountain is cinema as poetry, romance as revelation, science fiction as prayer. It ponders death, and not as some pale Bergman chess master, but death as a form of ecstasy. As a writer and director, Darren Aronofsky has never been one to shy away from either the morbid or the ecstatic, and he's yet to make a conventional film of any kind. In Aronofsky's movies, the path to enlightenment, that road to awe, isn't lined with wildflowers unless they're sprouting violently from someone's midriff. Here I'm compelled to say two things. First, this is one outlandish film, and many viewers will hate it. Hate it. Second, it's nevertheless a transcendent work of art, a vision of undying love that finds hope in grief, epiphany in death, and life in the loss of Eden. I, for one, was transfixed, eyes wide open, awed. End quote. Bravo, Amy. Bravo. The cure for altitude sickness, as Amy teaches us and points out, is moving our base camp higher up the mountain. Passively opening to agape is only half the story. We also have to enact our own eros. We rarely consider the possibility that just maybe when a film perplexes us, we need better lenses. I guess that's why I have to suffer through someone like Ropert maligning The Fountain, because it's easier for his kind to roll their eyes in the presence of a kaleidoscopic wonder than it is to die into it. That's what The Fountain asks of us. Aronofsky dares to make this invitation with utter sincerity. He assumes the best in us, that we will expand into bigger ways of knowing. Because we won't get The Fountain if we insist that it come together like the soothing analgesics we've stupidly conflated with storytelling. The greatest storytelling is the kind that undoes our story, dissolves the decoy of our small identity. The Fountain wants us to use senses we may not even believe we have. Are we up to it? Aronofsky is. Hugh Jackman and Rachel Weisz are. They conspire to put us at the point of all places. It's up to us to not freak out and flee at the first sign of the absolute. Admittedly, just because a film is transrational doesn't mean it's entertaining. Just because it's fluent in perspectives doesn't ensure that it will be engrossing. But for me, The Fountain delivered inner revelation through a masterful dance of dimensions, imagery, cinematography, visual poetry. Some of us may not instantly recognize it because we are estranged to our own higher self. As the film says, death is the road to awe, and there is much to be in awe of here. Let's not shrink away from it.
You are listening to www.integralnaked.com.